There is an endless sea of podcasts about entrepreneurship. Talking about it, but not living it. We live it every day. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel, talking about real estate investing, but also encompassing general subjects in regards to owning small to medium-sized businesses, and of course, all the struggles that business owners must overcome to be successful. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, and this is Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your host, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Today, we actually have a special guest in the house, actually inside the Wolf's Den today, not virtually. So excited about that. Stan Spaulding is with us today. And Stan, as a managing member of the Achilles Group LLC, Stan provides HR expertise, leadership, and guidance to business owners, executive leadership, and managers of companies of all sizes across a variety of industries. His core focus is to build team competency by encouraging strength of leadership, prioritizing planning and execution. He believes in the power of effective relationships and the essential element of continuous feedback. Stan is certified as a senior professional in human resources. His background includes more than 25 years of generalist HR experience with deep expertise in leadership development at all levels. One of his main responsibilities is facilitating executive-level discussions and encouraging leadership teams to uncover the answers that will drive their businesses forward. He also has experience with organizational development, staff restructuring, and startup and acquisition projects. He has worked with clients, oil and gas services, technology, professional services, warehousing, distribution, electrical, mechanical services, member-owned club facilities, accounting, and manufacturing.
And now property management.
And now property management, real estate. When he's not working, Stan likes to get outside and breathe, read, ride a little, and reconnect with blue sky, green trees, and family. Stan and his wife live in Houston and are blessed with two fine sons. So, Stan, thank you so much for joining us here today. We have been working with you now for a little bit of time. About five months or so. And for a lot of us small business owners, you know, it's the HR stuff. It's not Sean and I's expertise, right? And so that's kind of where you came into play. So I'd like for you to kind of get into, you know, give us a little bit of background on yourself and kind of go from there.
Appreciate it, Joni, Sean. It's wonderful to be here. I've been doing HR for about 20, 25 years, but I feel like I'm on my fourth career, you know. Yeah. I've been working since I was a kid, and over the time, I've done things in thoroughbred racing. I've worked in distribution environments. I've worked with nonprofits and a lot of children's services environments. And over the time, I've just learned an awful lot about just what frustrates me and gives me a challenge and patience. And I picked up a few leadership issues over the year, and then when I had a chance to join Achilles Group. It's been an amazing kind of feeling that I'm there for a reason, and things work well when you're kind of doing what you want to do and are meant to do.
So right.
I've enjoyed that.
That's awesome. Good.
Tell me a little bit, so our listeners might not know the background on the Achilles Group and kind of the services, like Joni mentioned before. So for us, you know, it was a piece that we were at that awkward size that, you know, we weren't quite large enough to have a full HR department. But yet it was such a vital we always struggled in it and hiring and making sure our files are up to date, keeping people accountable, all that.
And just even providing the, education piece of it. You know, I know you guys come in from time to time and do some, continuing some classes, that you offer, sexual harassment, those kind of things that, it's hard for small business owners to
be able to
do that.
Tell us what like cost effective HR is and like fractional HR. So explain that.
Achilles for about 20 years has been positioned as what we call a fractional HR company. And we serve as a resource, as a team, as a group. So most organizations or business leaders are challenged with multiple hats, as you guys well know. And we do a lot of things to take care of the fundamentals. You find somebody that's handling the files and the records and the payroll and benefits, but sooner or later there's extra challenges and issues, hiring, recruiting, just employee relations issues. So we built a business fundamentally focused on that kind of leader that's in a place that it can't afford to hire maybe a full-fledged HR department or multiple people. So as a group, we're able to kind of span that competency level from coordinator level to generalist or senior generalist or director, but also across the different domains of HR with employee relations or people development or recruiting effectiveness or risk mitigation, like you mentioned, strategy alignment, those kinds of things. So collectively, we come together and kind of meet a company where they are, a business team where they are. Everybody needs different levels.
Right.
So as we assess what they need, we can then get a person involved in the account that has the authority to pull anyone from our whole team in. We're all generalists by trade, but each of us have areas of depth, expertise, passion, and experience. So a business owner that couldn't afford a full-fledged, you know, director that is kind of paid too much for transactional stuff, or a coordinator that doesn't have anyone around to coach, train, and equip them, they bring us in to cover the full spectrum. And we do it very well, and our folks kind of become part of their team in a collective way.
Absolutely, and that's what I really love about it is I can literally call anybody from your team and they will walk me through anything that I need. If it's, you know, hiring, I need to hire somebody, or if I need to, you know, maybe I need to reprimand somebody, how to do that, you know, properly. So, I mean, yes, having your team has been extremely helpful for us.
It's been, and, you know, our lead or our contact, you know, Veronica, she's been awesome and always responsive and always there for us. But, you know, she's always brought in people as she's needed, depending on what the question or what the issue is. But it's been... Yeah, because we looked at it before, and it was like we would have probably ended up hiring that like entry level HR person, and there's no way they could have done the breadth of, you know, everything that you guys are doing as far as like the education piece, the and some of the, and then what you brought in, you know, when you came in and kind of sat with our leadership team for I think you sat in our quarterly
meeting,
but you know, you did that kind of higher level leadership development and discussion. And there's some I'm gonna get into later that you brought up that day that actually is on my computer screen. So you had that much of an impact. But anyway, it's awesome that you can. There is a company and those services are out there that, you know, when you're at that awkward size and you can't afford a full department with all the different branches and expertise, it really pays off. So
yes.
I had a question when you brought all that up. Is that difficult for you guys to step into, or is that the challenge that maybe you like? I'm assuming when you guys get hired, you know, and you said like you meet the company at their needs. That's got to be hard. Like, you're stepping into a variety of different companies and people and personalities and all sorts of, like, it's got to be an interesting dynamic.
Two things about it. So we don't want to do HR for HR's sake. It's really about business. It's about profitability. And we know the only way to get profitability is through developing, equipping, coaching your people.
Right.
And that's where this all happens. You guys have a ton of different enterprises. There's a certain amount of scope you can handle. You've got to work through your leaders and down through the front lines.
Right.
And so that does create, I guess, an opportunity for us to engage in very different cultures, very different life cycles of businesses. Different attitudes toward HR and perspectives on HR or just management in general. So variety is really part of it.
Definitely is,
We don't get bored at all. we get surprised sometimes, but we do a really good job on discovery. We try to understand not only what their business is about, but what the leader is about. And the areas that bring them kind of keep them up at night or, you know, bring them concern or issues, want to start there. And
we're
also architecturally minded, meaning they may want a certain thing like a compensation update or an evaluation program, but they've never really done clarity of roles and job descriptions. So it's hard to get compensation straight if you're not really clear on what's expected. So maybe some architectural things we put in place. We have to kind of go through steps. And but we dive in as part of them, and it's just our nature. No, we get surprised sometimes. We go through all the catalog, and then we get hired, and they pull up a drawer, and there's like 5 EOC claims or something that we have to deal with. But we do. We're in the business with them, and we don't charge about the hour or anything. It calls once or 100 times. It didn't change. So we'll dive in with them and whatever happens. And that's makes us part of things. We like that.
What percentage of people do you find that, you know, I think I feel Joni and I are like real receptive, and we take, you know, criticism or recommendations, and we really try to implement. We know we're not perfect. We know we don't know it all, but I'm assuming there's got to be some ownerships that a lot of times they think they know it all. And do you find that it's a struggle sometimes getting them to change or how do you work through that, you know, as far as advice and, yeah?
I got to know that our industry, HR, has got quite a reputation out there. We're actually the butt of a lot of sitcoms and things like that sometimes.
Because
HR for HR's sake, HR grunt, we don't want to play into that. But people have been exposed to HR as administrative, as tactical, as compliance related, as just the rule keeper.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't blame them for having that perspective. That's how they've operated all their life. But we want to make sure that we recognize that there's various dimensions of effectiveness, and they go beyond just mitigating risk.
Mm-hmm.
They go beyond just the procedure and process. It is about connection and relationship and influence.
Mm-hmm.
And so you take a leader like that is resistant or, you know, skeptical, or, you know, they want us to prove ourselves to them. We've got no problem with that. We're patient. We get in, we take a step at a time, we figure out what they need. Now, there are some times that we have to be very direct.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes individuals will challenge you in ways you don't expect. For example, we have some leaders that don't come in the room. They'll have their second or third or other people, you know, be kind of their gatekeeper and let that person do everything. And fundamentally, we very seldom want to really engage that way. It's not because we want to be just in the C-suite.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be access to an owner, a decision maker, who believe in cascading. And if they don't believe in what we're doing, you know, we can work all we want at a certain level, but their shadow covers the whole organization. So they've got to engage with us in a way, but we're patient in that. We have to earn their trust.
Yeah.
We know that.
Yeah.
I feel like you have to be patient in this industry.
You seem like a very patient person. Is that just your nature? Have you always been that way?
I guess.
Maybe your wife can say something different about it.
Well, yeah. Tracy's the patient one.
Yeah.
No, there's a ton of... I guess things I picked up along the way that I didn't intend to. You look back on your path, and sometimes my career path and various parts of my, I guess, professional walk have not been great, and I've fallen in the ditch and kind of figure out the wheels come off, what's next. And but amazingly enough, over the years, everything I've gone through and experienced it feels like it's kind of prepared me for this.
Okay.
You work with abused kids, and we were living house parents for several years.
Wow.
There's a different dynamic there that their sense of the world is based upon, you know, love, fear, pain, hurt, you know, inconsistencies. And you may not represent anything to them but just a male, and that has something different for them, you know, just the image of what that might mean, the lack of trust. So you have to really find ways to break through that over time, and it's a very patient process. And I think that really, that's kind of thing that, you know, you get a lot of patience when you're with that kind of environment.
Mm-hmm.
It takes time to work through it. And so I think there's been cases like that I've been, I think the social services side of my life has been really a blessing to me.
Yeah,
today.
Molded you into.
And it helped us for, you know, having our own family too, because I got to tell you, after living with 13 kids in a, from age 13 months to 12 years, I mean, that's a crash course in parenthood.
Yeah.
Yeah,
nothing was going to surprise us with our own children. So
wow,
worked a lot.
Wow, I didn't know that about your background.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that and being vulnerable there. And one question that I have is, what is the biggest challenge you find with hiring people or finding good people?
For us personally, or for our clients?
Well, for
both.
Yeah. Well, I think fundamentally for Achilles, we've got to make sure we've got not just an interest in the HR realm, but it's not so much their credentials of skills and expertise or education. That's very, very helpful to lay a foundation. But in our environment, because we're so collective in our work, we can grow people really fast. Because you get exposed to 10 times the amount of HR issues in our business dealing with all the different companies we deal with than you would ever get in one company. every day we have 20 of
something
those
something different, yeah.
Whatever those are, you know. So they get a crash course with us, and we're also very group-oriented. So we're looking for people that will engage. There's got to be humility there. There's got to be teachable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but also there's got to be some snap.
Right.
It really is. And some individuals have a great depth of expertise and experience, but then when you think about navigating from one client to the next, one culture to the next, multiple different industries, the speed of change in our day is incredible, and not everybody can handle that kind of speed of the game. So we've got to test in ways. There's both the snap, and in our environment, we're blessed with being able to have multiple people in our team meet with them, but it's a two-way interview. We want them to know the colleagues, the people that will be joining, and get a real sense of that.
Uh-huh.
So we've got kind of that concentration. when you extend that to our clients, what we've done internally is a really good process. We believe that everything is, it's not regimented, but it's flowed. It's mm-hmm. laid out, and there's steps, and there's people involved, and things we're trying to take care of. And that's one of the first things a private business leader needs to have is a process for their recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
You think about that, yeah, we got a process. You know, we get a need, we place an ad, but
right.
it goes more than that.
Yes.
It's really clarifying exactly what you need and what you're looking for and what the attributes are and what they're going to outcome that you want them to produce for your business
mm-hmm.
and price that appropriately and get a good ad put together that isn't just a job description thrown out there, but it mm-hmm. talks about your company and the
right.
opportunity. It's amazing how often people just take job descriptions and say, and just, hey, that's why I hear.
We've probably done
that's
that.
That's what we did in the past, but now we got Achilles Group actually helping us with our ads.
Yeah. So, but there's so much more to the enterprise of what you guys are.
Mm-hmm.
You want to share with that.
Right.
And then once the flow comes in, be prepared with screening steps and questions mm-hmm. and the toolkits, and then equipping the leadership for their panel interviews or their individual interviews, and then that matrix of decision-making. And we don't really think the recruiting effectiveness stops until we've gone through all that, got an offer, closed the deal. It's a
right.
big deal. People don't close a deal sometimes. Go a lot of work and then let the best fish go, whether we're looking for two or three more, you know.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then we don't think it stops until they've been onboarded in their 30, 60, 90 days.
Uh-huh.
They're really kind of into your culture. So we look at all of that as the recruiting process, awesome. Try to kind of build that. And I think that it sounds like it's a lot, but when you think about it, every other part of your business has that kind of process.
Mm-hmm.
You can't close a deal. You can't transact anything in your financial world or your business operations without all of those steps
right.
planned, set up. But when recruiting, we just throw an ad out and see what happens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think it's an area that's untapped, and we believe that we're filling a void there that most organizations go to an outsourced recruiter because they don't have time for this and they need expertise.
Mm-hmm.
But that fills a need, and there's absolutely a place for that. You know, key hires mm-hmm. and finding the headhunting, those kinds of things. But they don't ever help you get stronger yourself.
Right.
And that's mm-hmm. what we decide we want to focus on in that area of recruiting effectiveness. We want people to get stronger and have a competency for it long after we're gone. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that is so true.
We hope we never leave, but anyway.
Yeah, that's true, though, because we've hired a headhunter before, and, you know, once they're placed, that was it. You know,
yeah.
And they were like, oh, what do we do now?
Yeah,
you know? Nice. And just a lot of companies don't, like you said, spend a lot of time. We don't have our processes built for HR. And so, yeah, I mean, I can't talk highly how your company just come in to help us through the process so we can do better next time.
Yeah, and then the maturity, I think you help us.
Mature as a company.
Yeah, mature as mm-hmm. in this, in HR related, because I think, yeah, we so much, in the past, for you, it's like you have a hole and you just, and you're running a business, and so, like, and it's amazing how you don't think about it, but, like, we spend so little time on that part of the,
mm-hmm.
you know, because we think, like, oh, we got to spend over here all this business and operations and all that, and you're like, well, I got this seat I need to fill. I just fill it real quick so we get that body in there.
You run off emotion, you know, oh, you hire this person because they're like you, and you think that's a
right.
good person, you know?
And I don't want to hire everybody like me. That would be bad. Need more rounded team.
Yeah. Well, your team's much. Yeah, it's very. You got a good mix of personalities. I think it's healthy. It's good.
Yes. Yeah.
So let's talk about a team. From your perspective, how do you design a winning team? You've probably seen multiple organizations and people that are succeeding and companies that are maybe really growing or just have a thriving team that, you know, people love to come to work. How do you create that in your perspective?
Yeah, we have, I guess part of our history with Achilles Group is some of us have been refugees from corporate HR, meaning that we didn't like the just in a cubicle or in a mm-hmm. role here that we're just kind of a compartmentalized,
right.
you know, and everything kind of flows up and down silos,
mm-hmm.
and that's not really what any team should be about. Now, we recognize that everyone's got to have skills, competencies, and a clarity of role. But they also have an attribute of your team that's got to be able to move across and help and share your competencies or your insights or your viewpoint with others and
mm-hmm.
make that work. And so that's that collaboration piece that I think is a really big, big piece. Mm-hmm. We've got some simple ways to look at that. It comes through different themes in our Achilles way, but it's about working in the business or working on the business. I can hire someone to fill a role and work in that role and do those things, and they can do that day in and day out. if I don't give them some opportunity to kind of stretch and impact the business mm-hmm. in different ways, be included in a conversation or meeting, it's not necessarily their subject matter expertise, but they have a perspective, a way of thinking that I need to hear. I need someone else to kind of look at this and keep me from just jumping off the deep end, you know. Mm-hmm. And so allowing them to get involved in projects, improvements of process, you know, project teams mm-hmm. or initiatives that aren't just about their role, but they're about the business.
Right.
You face that. You guys mm-hmm. every day have to work in the business and do transactions, take mm-hmm. care of issues, but also you need some time to step off and improve and strengthen and focus.
Absolutely.
The business in some ways. So that's one attribute of the team, is you want to give the people a chance to play that way. Mm-hmm. That's a greater connection. Another aspect is the kind of your style or communication approach is some organizations, it's all kind of just set meetings and channels. But do you ever just kind of talk? Mm-hmm. We've designed our workspace. Not everybody can do that, but we're all in an open area. And when someone has a challenge issue, then kind of ring the bell, you know, so to speak, and everybody can turn around and just kind of help engage in that discussion. So it's made very easy for you
to
communicate that,
yeah.
way.
Hmm.
And I think that does a couple things. People get comfortable with each mm-hmm. other. They like to engage with you, learn how the other people think.
Right.
And then I have my business of my job, how it relates to their job. It makes it easier if you kind of like the people working there, you've engaged with them in different ways.
Uh-huh.
So I think breaking down those barriers, not just have people in roles, but having part of the team. Is a big piece
nice.
Of it.
Nice, I like that.
I never thought about that. What about like motivation? Do you find if you're including them, like you're saying, and involving them more in the conversation and having them have a sense of ownership and maybe in ideas and stuff like that, do you find that motivates, or do you find, you know, how do you, as an owner or as a manager, how do you keep motivating your team? Especially, I mean, because we're in a very rough industry, you yeah. know, and it's a very negative industry. And sometimes that's probably the biggest challenge is we got good people. And sometimes if they don't got a thick enough skin or they don't got some tread, you know, if they haven't been through some, you know, stuff in their life where they're used to getting F-bombed or, you know, stuff
that's
on the
right.
phone, they just, yeah. you know. But so how do you keep people engaged and motivated, you know? What would you recommend?
Yeah, there's everybody reacts differently to those kinds of stressors or challenges. Mm-hmm. But you're their connection to the culture. I mean, your leaders are the connection to their culture. So no matter how I'm addressed or engaged when I go out there on the battlefield with different clients mm-hmm. or situations, I need to make sure that I feel respect internally. I need to make sure that I feel the organization stands for respect internally here. And that doesn't mean everybody's using just, you know, flower language all the time or mm-hmm. something. But I don't attack you. Mm-hmm. I don't attack or demean you, your person. Even when I have a criticism, I'm going to criticize the performance in the role, not the person, not the
right.
identity. Mm-hmm. Okay. So getting that kind of investment that they know that their leadership and people around them are going to respect them and stand mm-hmm. for respect. But they also need to be given honesty. Mm-hmm. When you walk out there, someone spits on your shoe, just don't, you know, get upset about that, okay? It's okay. We'll work through it. Now, if they degrade you, if they threaten you, there's a line.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll protect you in that and we'll allow it to happen. But overlook or rephrase that. Allow all that stuff just to mentally fly past your shoulders. All the F-bombs they want, mm-hmm. what's going on. Maybe just say, hey, when you're done spitting at me, let me know if you want to talk. Mm-hmm. We'll continue. But don't feel the need to defend or jump into that. Just understand that for whatever reason, their style, their culture, their upbringing, their stress, they're flying off. If you don't react to it, it doesn't get internal.
Yeah.
You know, when I buy into it and I got to defend this, and mm-hmm. how dare he, then I got a problem. So your job, our job often, is to enter in situations where people aren't feeling good about things and they're having challenges and having issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to criticize them for being frustrated, intense, and irritable. Mm-hmm. But again, that's different than if they are out and out abusive, threatening, or demeaning. Mm-hmm. So you draw some lines there, okay. but you don't allow them to interpret that F-bomb as disrespect of who you are.
Yeah.
Just let it fly over.
Yes.
Focus on what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And what about like length, you know, so employees that have been, or team members that have been, you know, in the organization for a while, you know, and just keeping, you know, because Joni and I are hard drivers, and maybe it just comes natural to us that we just, you know, we get up every morning and we're going to attack again and go at
yeah.
it again. But I don't know if everybody has this
the same drive. Yeah. Well, I think also you don't, like, not everybody has a different motivation, right? And
yeah.
so I think that as leaders, we need to find out what that motivation for them is, whether it's, you know, bonuses or gifts or, you know, whatever,
appreciation.
Yeah. Like, you know, going back to love languages, you know, mine is appreciation. Sean's is service. So you just finding that what you really drives your people, I think, is important.
Yeah, the everyone is different, like you said. But see the good is one thing to really focus on. We're very quick to criticize. We don't commend with near as much urgency. Mm-hmm. So it's a constant reminder to see the good. We need to recognize that openly and transparently. Mm-hmm. You know, make that just part of what you're looking at. Another piece of that is that affirmation and that appreciation that people need. When they work through something, even if they pulled it out of the ditch and didn't get it very high, but they saved from going further, acknowledge that. Acknowledge those efforts that made a difference. And when you have an opportunity to do that openly in front of the team, absolutely do that. So that's just kind of those kind of watering sessions that you need to put in there every day. But as far as deeper motivation, people do want to progress. They do want to have opportunity to grow. They want to be perceived as being able to contribute at a higher level or making a difference. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that is we make the mistake as leaders of saying that means a promotion, a ladder kind of approach.
Right.
We prefer to look at it as you become stronger, more capable, and we're leaning on you more to drive certain things. Mm-hmm. Take the learning process. If I'm just now learning something, someone's shown me every step. Once I get to a place that I understand it, I can kind of, just have some supervision gradually and here and there. Sooner or later, that supervisor can turn their back on me, and they know I'm going to handle most things. I know when to escalate it. Mm-hmm. Someday I'm asked to both. I can do it so well, I can train someone else to do it. Mm-hmm. You hear that progression from being totally fed to being able to feed others.
Yeah.
And positioning people out there, it doesn't mean you necessarily have to promote them, but you're actually expanding their contributions. You do need to look at compensation and how you handle that. We'd like to talk to companies not just about what they do in pay and pay structure. We'll certainly do that. But also about how they want to structure incentives and bonuses. What's their philosophy behind that?
Yes.
Do they share profitability? How do they speak of that to their organization? How do they act in that to prove you're sincere about it? And some of the most powerful things you can do aren't really a plan, but they're a spontaneous commitment to sharing profitability when it's due. Give an attaboy when you have the opportunity. And everybody is experiencing that differently. Now, obviously, you have to pay attention to your competition and how things are growing and try to preserve, but also recognizing that you're not trying to keep everybody for careers. Sometimes there are positions that are good for 3 or 4 years. They learn and grow, and they move on. You reload. And if that's the kind of position you have in certain cases, then we have a good system to reload.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. So. There's two things or points I wanted to make about what you just said. To start off, you number one, like almost relationship advice, because you gave some really good, I think I'm victim to it. I come from a whole doctor of a family, a whole family of doctors. So I feel like I was born into this where they look for problems all day long and they just, that's what they're just like, I'm going to fix it. That's all they're doing is like all day they look for problems and then how am I going to fix it? Or here's my recommendation to fix it. And so I approach a lot of relationships like that. First thing I think, it's not like I'm even consciously, and that's the awareness part I need to keep working on. But, I'm always looking, I look for problems like with Joni, and instead of looking for the 10 things she just did right, I focus on that one thing that she did wrong. And then, Andrew, who introduced you to us, we had a good running joke, him and I, because there was a period there, a couple of weeks where, I don't know what Joni and I were just on the team hard, and we were so focused on a lot of, we just weren't moving the needle quite as, so we were really putting the extra pressure on staff, and it was
and any little complaint just set Sean and I off, and we're like, man, what is the problem? Why aren't we getting this right?
The team came back to us and said, hey, and even Andrew is like, hey, we're doing 95% of the things right in here. You guys are really heavily focused on this 5%. So every day he'd come in and be like, hey, we're doing 95% of everything right today. and then we'd get a complaint from an owner. Ah, we're back down to 94. Right. But and so it was a joke, but that we were running. And the team needed at that time more pointing out the
positive.
The 9 out of 10 things that we're doing right and not just keep focused on that one. And
right.
So I think that was crucial. What was the second thing I was going to mention to you? What's your opinion on performance-based versus I guess like loyalty based, you know, you you work 10 years, you should be promoted kind of attitude, and versus really, I guess, would you say that's a culture that the company sets, or is that, you know, is there in your opinion, one or the way that's better over the other?
Yeah. Some companies have access to certain techniques that others can't. I mean, we're in a group of, you know, a couple dozen employees that we can really work with, you know, a lot of face-to-face. You guys can be very direct with some of your people. If you have 500 employees, you have to work in a different structure.
Right.
You have to work with how that cascades down through. The overall, I guess motivation side of things, when you have a performance of an employee in a role that's producing well for you, I mean, they're doing the outcomes you hope out of that role. You need to acknowledge that, move for that, and that's the performance-based side. You want to see how far they can go and if they can transition that into maybe higher-level contributions or what's happening. And whether I am here 1 year or 10 years, I need to be based or kind of evaluated on the same scale. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't really be giving, and I don't think, you know, brownie points because you've been here 10 years longer to learn to do something.
Right.
On the other hand, you have to recognize that loyalty, that commitment, that organizational knowledge the longer they've been there. And I don't think that that a person should be stagnant, to be honest. I mean, you guys, if you are stagnant in any part of your business, the business stops.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so there's that balancing act between I want to encourage, give you opportunity to grow and engage and invest in you, but I also want to make sure that you recognize that I do expect you to continue to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
You need to learn the new system we put in place. You need to use the new system we put in place. You know, I'll work with you. I'll give you opportunities. And the real tragedy is if we hire people without thinking through the level of development that they can go through. In other words, they're at a set level, and they never want to change. They're kind of rigid. Mm-hmm. Some people, unfortunately, kind of put themselves in that place. And unfortunately, if they do that, sooner or later,
absolutely.
So you want to do the right thing in the right way. You want to work through it, respect and dignity. But sooner or later, that is the hard fact of business. It is competitive. You have to have a progression. Mm-hmm. You have to have a growth. And our job is to make sure they have opportunities and resources to progress and good leadership to help them grow. Yeah.
So do you feel in today's environment, I think I would say like in the past or you go way past, you know, that used to be, people used to work for a company for 25, 30 years.
Right.
One company and then retire. I don't think you see that anymore, and maybe it's, you know, I don't know. There's obviously a changing in times, but do you feel, two kind of bold questions. So do you feel like, what do you recommend? Like, do you think there is, that can exist where somebody works for a company for 20, 25 years and retires? Or do you think, you know, is it starting to change to where people are switching every 3 to 4 years? And then, is that healthy, you know, that kind of turnover, that kind of, you know, so.
Well, I could take that a lot of directions.
Yeah.
But that's okay. There's, again, culturally, some businesses are tuned in to a shorter life cycle.
Okay.
One of the first jobs I had was loading trucks. Their job, their idea was to kind of go out there and get college students, work for 2 or 3 years, you know, really hard, part-time basis, and they expect them to move on.
Right.
And reload continuously. Mm-hmm. They had to be set up in a really good, efficient process of getting in, getting equipped, and then reloading. Okay. And that's good business. It works. Mm-hmm. Now, they had other positions they wanted to make kind of lifetime. Mm-hmm. They wanted people to get involved and progress through package cars or into supervision or into management and be part of their organization and continue to grow. So they had both spectrums. It depends on what position, what role they're playing. I almost forgot the second part of your question.
You clarified that. Because you said it's more maybe role-based sometimes as far as the longevity of somebody.
How long
but
you
then,
would stay.
Yeah, the industry maybe. Yeah.
I do think that we started looking at, we were frustrated too because we grow people really fast and we equip them really well. And very quickly, they can go out there and we spun off half a dozen, you know, VP of HR and director positions around Houston because the people we brought in grew and they went off for one company and they expand their scope. But then when I finally got to the place, I recognized that part of what I need to look at my particular business is that we're a college recruiting program.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to bring in some good people. We can grow them fast. The faster we get them on the field, the better. And we hope a few of them stick around as grad assistants and coaches someday. Mm-hmm. but a lot of them are going to move forward. And so we're okay with that. Once we kind of got peace with that, and then we end up getting a stability of certain groups that are working on the business and growing and expanding and staying with us, and others can kind of flow through, and we're okay with that. Okay. We have a lot of friends in Houston that are doing HR for companies that started with us, and that's really good.
Yeah.
It doesn't work for every company like that in every position like that, but you can find a mix.
Yeah.
Of some that are kind of committed and staying there, and hopefully you want them to be there for 10 or 15 years. But that, again, that working on the business piece is a big piece of that.
Yeah.
You give them something to say, I'm building this with you, not just working for you.
Right. And we always, I think it was a person, it was kind of a personal related question. And a lot of the questions I ask guests is for my own needs. And I think the listeners,
listeners have the same issue.
Because, you know, Joni and I always, man, we got a lot of people to that 5-year mark, and then it's like either we outgrew them or
and that happens too.
Or they matured and left and went you know, and went somewhere else or started their own business, and that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it just seemed like we always hit that year mark, and it's like then we started questioning ourselves, like is it us? Are we? Can we not keep people longer than 5 years? You know.
Let me add one tag along to that, because it does get frustrating. You look at, you know, some really, really see a future with, and they're good, strong contributors, and then they fly. And but it goes back to when I hire a person or a person's joining your company, I believe you do have a mutual commitment. You want to bring them in to help you grow and produce profitability. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you want them to have stability in their life and income and growth and opportunities. Mm-hmm. You really care about them. If you're not treating them as just numbers, you know, you want to do that. So I think somewhere there it's a dialogue as you go along. You know, what's happening with you? What's good about working here? What are you concerned about? What are the opportunities? So we should have no surprises when someone wants to look at another, you know, another venture, because we've been talking about it. You know, they've been honest with us. We've been open to that channel. It's one thing I'd like to get to is just, you know, talking about how you open up that channel of just, you know, really embracing and getting feedback.
Yeah, well, that's actually next to it. Feedback is the breakfast of champions. So explain that motto.
Well, over the years, we've invented. We just understand there's a lot of principles and philosophies and disciplines of leadership out there that make a difference. And as we embrace those in our business by any language, we recognize that it's all about engagement. And leaders need to both feel engaged in your business, so working on the business side as employees. They also need to be really good at helping others engage, okay, and be engaged in your business. Because it's that engagement that gets you the discretionary energy. I mean, I can do command and control or responsibility or paycheck. I can get you to come in and do certain things. Mm-hmm. But it's the engagement that gets you to take the extra step. It's the engagement that gets you to deal with the F-bombs flying by and keep smiling and saying, I'll stay in here and stay in the game. Because they understand the big motivation about the business. And so if we have a need for engagement, there's a lot of leadership disciplines involved in that. But we look at that feedback as kind of like oxygen. It's the first step for everything. Think about in business, in industry, we spend millions of dollars trying to build systems to capture feedback, financial feedback, operational feedback, you know, even equipment running, how long it's running, what's wear and the heat and the temperatures and all. Look at your car. You're driving a car. You need feedback to drive that car, all the instruments, you know. And so why would you think anything different with your people and your relations and development? So we're all ready to give feedback. But the reality is there's three dimensions to feedback, and that should be the third. The first is making it really safe and open to invite feedback and receive it well so that so you're hearing what you need to hear.
Right.
The second is watching your face and your body when they give it to you, you know, blow it, you know, shut it down. How you receive it, you know.
Yeah.
And there's techniques in receiving it effectively, not taking it personally and asking clarifying questions instead of defending. So there's things that happen there. And then your positioning. If I've been really open and gotten your feedback and you've felt trusted and safe and secure to tell me what I need to know, not what I need to, you, I want to hear, then you're going to be more open to me giving you feedback as well.
Correct.
Good point,
And that's connection. Because that's when you start questioning your position here or looking at your home situation saying, I need to get a better, you know, level of income or a different schedule. Those aren't mysteries to you.
Right.
They're talking to you about that, especially if you've done other things in the business besides a paycheck to try to connect with them. And that's what we're talking about here in engagement is connecting.
That's awesome. A good point, because we talk about, you know, our staff having that gotta have it attitude, you know, just, but it's, there's a lot of truth to that, the engagement part.
Do you find that, like when you get that open line, do you find, is there a balance, you know, as a maybe a manager. I always look at the difference between like an owner and an employee, or a leader or manager as an employee. That when you start getting, you're opening that door, right? And do you sometimes hear things that maybe you don't, like how do you respond to that sometimes? The criticism and all that.
Yeah. When you get feedback from folks, recognize it's their perceptions.
Yeah.
And it's based upon your actions or their interpretations of your actions. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's your intent in your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Someone tells Stan, Stan, I think you're arrogant. Okay, well, that stings. That's not what I want to project. That's not what I want to give to somebody.
Right.
That's not at all. But I've got to recognize that whatever my face is saying or doing or my body or my tone, they're perceiving that.
Mm-hmm.
So asking clarifying questions, don't take it to heart. I don't take that to sting. I say, okay, well, what can I do to work on that? Sometimes I try to invite them into the process to say, look, next time you see me shutting you down, but it's most important to actually get in their eyes and ask them, okay, what do you see when you think I'm arrogant? What's it sound like? What's it look like? What am I doing? Because I may have behaviors I'm not recognizing. I mean, my granddad didn't smile much. My dad didn't smile much. So I don't smile much sometimes. Okay, I got to work at it. You do it very well. I don't as easy. Okay. So I have to be reminded of that, and I'm casting a shadow or an image, and I may be in fine shape and doing fine in my head, but people think, well, what's wrong with Stan today?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you need to invite people in the process. I had a colleague once that apparently I was doing that every time when I was walking through the office, and went to they said, Stan, are you really that stressed? What's going on? I said, no, I just didn't work out today, and I need to breathe, but they end up, joining me, and over time I said, okay, well, here's what I'm going to do. When you see me doing that, would you tap or give me a little signal or just, smile at me or something to get me to, because it's not my intent. And
right.
I didn't want to cast that around the office, make people feel Stan's unapproachable because he's all, exasperated or stressed. And over time, every time she would, see me, she'd give me that little cue, and then eventually I would approach her area and
it's a little trigger.
I would swallow it, I would not do it. Grab that script, and we changed it finally. So it's just... It helps you when you're transparent.
Is there a daily practice that you would recommend for getting that feedback or starting that dialogue and that?
We talked about that recruiting process. We actually map this into how we engage with people. We want to start every engagement with an understanding that you just spent 45 minutes in an interview with us. Please honor us with criticism. What worked, what didn't, what feedback. Discovery process with prospective clients, we'll do a dialogue with them before we leave. Okay, we just spent an hour of your life. Please let us know how that worked. In other words, we want to embed the desire and the sincerity of seeking feedback into the very first relationships you have. It becomes almost expected. Hey, you just got hired on. I tell you what, I'm going to check with you every so often. Don't read anything into it. I just really want to know, fresh eyes and ears, what's working for you, what's not. And in the first day, first week, first month, you start embedding it in to your behaviors, and then you do make sure that when you have tough situations or tension or whatever you talk through, you pause at the end and say, okay, look, I really want to understand this. How did this read to you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's going on? And if you do that routinely, it almost becomes reflex after a while, and they start feeling safe in it as well. So when they give you something tough, you didn't respond badly.
Right.
Clarifying questions, kind of engage in the process, and then they get more and more bold, courageous.
Mm-hmm.
The opposite is true as well. Leaders that shut you down or defend or react, or they'll shut you down.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon you're surrounded by a whole bunch of people who have nothing to say, and that doesn't help you.
So it reminds me of, I just learned from another, you remind me because of your book, Story Branding. He's a real big proponent of that, but another business owner. But he also implemented something I thought was similar to that. And I don't know the exact name of the strategy, but when you have an employee and they need an assignment, you go to them and you ask them to and be very clear. But that employee could, you open the door to where they can accept it, reject it, or counter.
Yeah.
And that's hard sometimes if I'm telling an employee to do something, you expect, hey, do it because I'm doing it. But they maybe don't, maybe you already gave them five assignments and then they don't have the time or the to do it. So they can counter and say, hey, or they could say, hey, I have these three items you already gave me. Which one is most important? Which one in priority? And then you get more effective. But then once they've done the project you asked them to do, they deliver it to you and they say, I am finished. Because a lot of times we will come in and see what they're doing or their progress, and they're not finished yet. So once they've delivered, they have to say, I'm finished. And then they ask for feedback, you know, how was it? And really, yeah. So then you know, because it might be, you know, they're thinking they're knocking it out of the park, and if they don't know that, you know, you're not happy with certain things or it took longer than, you know, but they need that feedback right. to improve, or they may be knocking out of the park, and that's
They need to know where they are in the progression, I guess, the journey of that. And it sounds like a great technique.
Yeah.
I think the point of it is that have a technique, have a discipline to saying, I want to hear from you. Yeah. In our world, we say, don't be a victim. Okay. Yeah. If I give you an assignment, a challenge, I'm not going to expect you, once we agree upon the dates, the deadlines, the next step, to produce or to come to me and tell me, you know, resources you need or gaps you have
right.
or challenges or questions. What I don't want you to do is show up at delivery time and say, well, I had a problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I should have heard that earlier.
Yes.
That's being a victim. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to be wide open. Do you need more resource, more clarification, that kind of thing? We also combine that with what we call this one of the Engaged Leadership Series in AUAC. It's about clarity of expectations. Being aware of an expectation is a starting point. Understanding it, you know, why it's good for me and the organization is a big step. And then I can move to that acceptance and be challenged on it if I'm not accepting it. And eventually you need a few people to go to being a champion for it. And that's a commitment level. Mm-hmm. So expectations aren't an exact science. You have to kind of work on it. But the point is that has a technique, that has an approach, and that's a good discipline.
Some are trying to adopt and implement it. But as far as the have you ever done any like feedback kind of courses where you've come in and either taught the organization or a leadership on and, you know, that just your whole concept of feedback and body language and those three steps?
Every day. we can't help ourselves. We do formal kind of team coaching facilitation around a series of engaged leadership topics. You know, feedback's one of those. We go into relationships matter with, you know, respect and trust, two-way communication, building connection in that way. Go to the clarity of expectations I just described. So we have a series of those. We lay them out kind of in sequence, but day-to-day, in day-to-day interactions, a tough situation with an employee, a conflict, whatever, we will be bringing those concepts to the table. We'll be explaining some of the principles. We want the organization to understand the language, the principle, just like you said, there's a rhythm to, you know, setting this up for success. Then we can speak into it on day-to-day activities. That's really actually more, it's more powerful than just spending a session in a training session. But we need to get the language or people understanding, or at least leaning in that this matters, if I want to engage with my people, here's some actual techniques I can work on to do it. We look at it just like if you're working on a piece of equipment or you've got a carpentry skill, or there are certain skills you can learn relative to this leadership and engagement. We're just trying to lay the philosophies, principles, and disciplines down in a way that you can see it and recognize it. And once people do see it, it's pretty powerful.
That's great.
So, awesome. Any last key advice, or if you had one thing on an HR that you would share to business? We have a lot of, I think, listeners that are, you know, either small to medium sized businesses or just starting out. Any words of advice you would, is there one thing that they should all know about HR?
There's things that drive you. There's passion points. There's expanding of your business, your opportunities, you know, developing your idea, competition and winning in the market. But I think you're fed most, and when people really get down to it, you're fed most by the people and the relationships and the people that are on the journey with you, even if they're there for a short period, a year, 2 years, 5 years. You're enriched, and you have an opportunity to engage and connect and enrich them. If you do that well, the business will grow.
Yeah.
You have to be smart enough to do the right things. Mm-hmm. You guys come up with a lot of technique and approach. But I can have all the ideas in the world and the vision in the world, but if I don't have people, you know, following through with it, I think that's it. So don't take your eye off of that. It's easy to do early, but I think we get really, really, really busy sometimes.
Right.
And delegate all that to someone else. So if you're not there, then make sure your leaders are equipped to carry that kind of voice with your people.
Yeah.
And they care.
That's a good point.
So, yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
I think because it's we get so much sometimes into, like, the business performance. And and I think sometimes we look at people sometimes negatively because sometimes they're not doing. But if you really look at the positive parts about working with so many people, and is the impact you can have on people.
For sure.
STG, see the good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see the good. I'm going to have to remember that one. That's good for me. Yeah, I'm going to have to get a little band or something on me to just remind me.
I think that's a great ending point.
See the good.
See the good, absolutely.
Well, we appreciate you joining us today, and I think you got a ton of advice. And if people want to get a hold or local here, or I don't know if you work with people nationwide, but how can they work with you, or how can they get more information on the Achilles Group?
Well, certainly AchillesGroup.com on the website, or if they want to reach out to me with an email, it'll be Stan@AchillesGroup.
Awesome.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to what you're going to provide to our team. So thank you, Stan, for being on here today.
I appreciate it. We love the journey.
Awesome.
Let's continue.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkle. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there talking.
Talking.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolf'sDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.